Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco. It is a radio.com sports station. Joe Lowe and Dibs, Jim Cozumar in for Joe Fortenbaugh. Dan Dibley's here, Lorenzo Neal. Woody is here, one of the great, one of the fan favorites, one of the all-time fan favorites for Giants fans, Kirk Reeder, joining us here on Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Kirk, we trust that you and your family, everyone is safe right now and healthy. We hope everything is going well for the Reeder family.
Yes, we are all doing well here in Illinois and haven't had any problems, so back to you guys, too. I hope all you guys are doing well and just trying to get through this time.
Yeah, it is. It's a tough time for all, and hopefully we can all get through it together and get come out stronger and safer. All right, Kirk, as a former major leaguer, how leery are you that we might not see Major League Baseball in 2020?
Boy, I always tell people I always look at the positive, so I'm not even going there. I'm hoping that we, you know, get something settled and that there is baseball. I think everybody wants to see baseball, but, you know, I'm not, obviously I was part of a expo team that didn't get to play, or we thought we might have a chance in the World Series, and I didn't think that would happen. So, you know, but like I said, I'm still a positive guy, so I'm going to say hopefully we get to see baseball at some point this season.
When we look at the two different proposals that are being floated, with the players saying maybe 114 games would work starting June 30th and going through October, and then the ownership coming back and saying, well, maybe 50 games would be more appropriate. Do you think that this is just posturing? Is this pre-negotiation? Or is this maybe foretelling that there's going to be problems coming to terms with how to get the season going?
Well, I think there probably already is. Some kind of where, I mean, obviously there's some kind of problems, or else they probably would have had a deal. But I think that happens all the time. I'm just, like I said, hopefully they can get together before it's too late, because you don't want it to go too far. I know they've been saying they're going to try and start sometime in July and get some games in. And I think everything's on the table. I mean, I know I've heard the doubleheader thing to try and get more games, and I don't know. You know, I'm not in the negotiation, so I don't have a firsthand knowledge of anything.
Sure.
Or what each side is thinking. But 50 games to me seems like pretty low to try and get as a player, because you're wondering how good you're going to let starting pitchers even go deep. I mean, I'm coming from my perspective, obviously, how deep they're going to go into a game and you know, how valid 50 games would be, maybe, is what I'm getting at. I mean, that's almost like a little over a month of a season,
right?
Almost, basically.
Right.
So I don't know how that would go. But, I mean, I think anything – I just want to see baseball, and I think the players do. I think the owners do. And like I said, hopefully they can find some kind of common ground and get a season underway, and whatever it is, I think people will obviously be ready for it.
Kurt, I love your optimism. I think you're like, please just skip baseball. I don't want to know. Yes. I don't want to think about the alternative. That, hey, put you in for commish. You got my vote. When you think about it, Kurt, you've seen the proposal last week, the week before, 81 games. The league says, okay, 81 games. The players are thinking about 81 games, and it comes down to salaries. And, you know, guys didn't want to take that big of a haircut. So, you know, the Players Association goes up 30, and then the ownership goes down 30. So do you feel that they're closer than they were last week? Because the number of games they got farther away agreed upon. Do you believe, though, the negotiations are closer, even with both sides going even further away from the middle?
Well, and I don't know if games is going to determine whether it's close. I mean, obviously everything that I've read, and that's all I'm getting, is what I read from on an article. But what I'm seeing is I think it's going to come down to where the money is going to fall for each side. You know, I don't know if games is going to be a determining factor as far as, oh, gosh, we got to play this many games. I think everybody's looking at, like, what – I mean, I know the owners are saying they're going to lose so much money because the fans aren't there. And I think it's going to boil down to what everybody feels is okay money-wise, and then we'll get closer and there could be a deal. And what that is, I have no idea.
Sure.
But I don't know if the games, you know, going up to one whatever – because I'm not, like I said, I'm not privy to the negotiation, so I don't know how much more money or less money, depending on games, is going to cost everybody.
Kirk Reeder joining us, Joe Lowandibs, 95.7 The Game here on a Tuesday. Kirk, just from a practical perspective from the player's side, and I love the fact that you're trying to take the positive on this, but if you're a pitcher, how much time do you need to get into regular season condition for your arm, knowing it's going to be a different type of year, especially if it might be a contract year for you? How dangerous could it be, or how difficult could it be for a pitcher to be in proper condition with the timing so askew right now?
Well, I think a lot of that is going to depend on what they've been able to do while they've been at home or wherever they went, you know, once they got sent away from spring training. Because I had talked to a couple people, and they said that their players were having a hard time, you know, because when I went home in the off season all the time, I would always have my high school coach that I could go throw with or go into my gym and get workouts, and everything was closed. So I don't know when, you know, as a starting pitcher or any pitcher, they were able to throw or how much they were able to throw. And I think a lot of that will determine how quick they'll be able to get ready. You know, even if they give them, you know, 20 days or 25, I mean, if they hadn't been able to do anything, they'll be behind. And, you know, hopefully they were able to get somewhere and throw or play long toss or do something outside to keep their arm in shape, because I know that's what I would have been trying to do, and that they won't take as long. But, I mean, I totally understand. I mean, especially like you said, if guys are in a walk year that they're looking at a big free agency deal, do you want to come back and, you know, think you're going to throw 130 pitches in a complete game when you probably haven't done that? It'll be going on almost, what, 9 months for some guys? Nine? I don't know if you'd want to do that.
Right, probably not great for the old arm, especially now that we don't build guys up like back in our day, Kirk, when you'd go out there and maybe throw 120 pitches and pitch 4 days later in a shorter rotation. How much does a fractured or maybe a non-existent minor league system this year affect baseball's return? Because if you have injuries and you have depth pieces you want to bring up, but you don't have minor league going on, how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen where they're going to have the taxi. You know, they're trying to say they're going to keep some of the minor league guys around. And I'm sure that's what that's for, if people get hurt or they can call them up for whatever reason. But you know, are they going to be playing? I mean, I don't know if they've figured all the minor league, you know, are they just going to be working out? So, you know, how sharp would they be if they're not right in a game situation? I don't know how that's going to work. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a rough – I mean, and I feel bad for, you know, all the minor league guys now that, like, last week they were, you know, starting to release guys and cut guys and some teams are paying, some teams aren't. And,
right.
You know, those guys, minor league guys, don't, you know, it's not like they're making a lot of money. And it, with families that they have, I mean, I'm sure they're all scrambling and worrying about what their baseball future is without a whole minor league season this year. So it's a mess and unfortunate, but, you know, hopefully, like I said, I think some minor league guys will be able to be on like the taxi squad or whatever they call it, and maybe get called up. But I don't know what they're going to be doing in the meantime.
Right. Well, it's thoughts and prayers with those guys. Kurt, if you're just going to talk to the masses, you know, we always say Jolo and Dibs and Coes, we talk to billions. And with everything going on, Corona, we see social injustice, all the different things that happen. Kind of tell just our listeners what sports, how much did they help you, or just when you seen in your experience, you know, me being a man of color and playing sports and how it brings me. Tell just the listeners how sometimes in these tough times, what sports do or what togetherness do. And just because right now we've seen this, it's been kind of untouchy and everything's going kind of crazy. What advice or just words of encouragement you can just give to our listeners?
Well, I mean, just sports to me, I mean, that's obviously, it was basically my whole life up until when I retired. Everything I was doing, and especially, I mean, even when you're younger, you just want to hang out with your buddies and your friends and have a good time. And I tell people all the time, I mean, I'm from a small town here, and I'm telling the people here, you know, don't have your kids be playing sports thinking that, oh my gosh, they're going to the major leagues or they're going to the NFL, NBA. Let your kids play sports to have fun, be around their friends. You learn, you know, great social skills, how to get along with different people. And that's what sports is for, or at least for me, it was. I mean, that's what I look forward to all the time. And now, obviously, as you get older, as in pro, when I was in the major leagues or whatever, it becomes a little more of a job because you're supporting a family. And
right.
To me, if you talk to anybody I played with, I mean, I was always treating it still like I was in college and high school. I mean, I loved going in the clubhouse. I loved walking in. I mean, my favorite time walking in was when I'd get in and have to banter with Dunston and go back and forth about stuff with him from the day before and laugh and see Aurelia, see Min. You know, that was my time. And if you talk to guys I played with, they would say he always came in like it was high school. And that's what I think sports is. And even at that level, I enjoyed it. I loved being around the guys. And that's the one thing that if you told me I could go do that, I would come back to Major League Baseball in a hurry if I didn't have to go out and pitch every 5 days.
Wow. That's neat. That is so cool. Woody, you're always so gracious with your time. We always appreciate having you on 95.7 The Game. Hey, before we let you go real quick, in 94 when it was the shortened year and everyone was so upset, was there a fracture with the fans at all? Did it take a while for fans to accept you guys coming back when you did come back the next year? What was that whole fan part of it like, and when did you feel that baseball was back?
Well, I mean, for us, I mean, I still think that strike ruined baseball in Montreal. I mean, I think if we would have been able to get into the playoffs and not even win, just go to the World Series, bring that excitement to the city, I still believe there might be baseball in Montreal today. And, you know, our fans obviously were upset at that, because that was their chance, they felt. And then, you know, we got rid of all of our guys that were going to be free agents or were tradable after that strike happened. So it was like we had a different team. And yeah, it took a while. And I think, you know, like it's been well chronicled, I don't know if we came back and got everybody kind of on board until the home run chase in 98. I mean, there was still fans, you know, they didn't have a World Series, and you know, that's a hard thing for people to get over. I mean, just imagine not having a Super Bowl like in the middle of
right.
I mean, a lot of people, if you're a diehard base, you're looking forward to a World Series no matter who's in it, and we didn't have one that year. So I think it did take, I mean, I would probably agree, the 98 when the home run, that generated that excitement, and and people started to come back. But it definitely put a little dent, you know, in the fans as far as how they looked at us, especially just right away.
That's interesting. Really is. Woody, thanks again so much for your time. You're always so gracious with it. We love talking to you. Love talking baseball. Hopefully the next time we have you on, we will be talking actual baseball and looking forward to the Giants season ahead.
You're the best, Woody.
I'm still positive, so I'm waiting for baseball.
Great. That's what we like to hear. That's
great,
what we like.
Man, huh?
Yeah,
that
what a good
personality
guy. Kurt Reeder joining us here. Good guy.
Yeah. Yeah, Dibs. His personality, Kurt Dibs, is just... it's just unbelievable. You can just feel the exuberance of excitement of life, and just this seems like an awesome man.
Then he tells the stories of the '94 Expos, and you go back and you look at that team. And I know you know this, Jim, being a roster geek, but guys like Pedro Martinez, you know, likely Hall of Famer on that team. You had Marquise Grissom, you had Woody. That team was stacked, and they were going to win the World Series. And yet to have it be canceled and to have it cost Montreal, which was a good Major League Baseball city, Jim, and I think it had the potential to be a great one going forward. I know you're a wannabe Canadian, yeah, so you can speak to it better
yes,
than I can.
Yes, exactly.
But it was just really sad what happened
shots fired.
To Montreal, and it's just a fact. Those are facts, as Guru might say.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Are these facts?
These are
Jimmy,
facts.
Jimmy, you're denouncing.
Hey, I married into Canada, so, you know, they got to take me one way or the other, I think.
Right,
I think that's
right.
How the rules go.
But
that's
if she takes you, then they
that's
have
true.
To take you. I, think
I know, that's true. My bride and my daughters could just leave, and I couldn't get to them. So
yeah, maybe. Your daughters are in scot-free. Your wife has to give them the nod at the border in order for you to get in. That's the way that works, Lo. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's the escape plan. That's their escape plan, by the way. They got a little plan that they're going to hatch.
Take all the money and then get to the border. And look at you
that's
and like
it.
He can't come. We don't want
yep.
him.
Yeah, but Dibs, you're right. That Montreal Expos team, that was one fun team to watch. And like any city, when you're in the playoffs, most cities start to really there's a fever pitch that goes on. And I remember watching those games, and the fans were going berserker at old. They used to play it at the Olympic Stadium, correct?
Yes.
That's where they played their games.
Yeah, 74-40 when it all got shut down.
Oh.
Felipe Alou. Your skipper. You had Moises on the team, Marquise Grissom, Larry Walker was on that team, Pedro Martinez. They were legit. They were probably the best team in baseball, and yet 74-40, Lo, 114 games in, they straight shut it down. And oh, by the way, that's kind of an interesting number, coincidental
yeah.
with Major League
yeah,
Baseball.
It
just hit me. 114 games is what the players are proposing, allegedly, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN, and that's exactly what the Expos played 26 years ago.
That's an in-your-face, isn't it?
No pun intended. Exactly, that's what it is.
That's an in-your-face. You shut us down in 94 at 114. Well, why don't we go come back with 114? That's the way we're going to do it. That's solid work on your end there, Dibs. You know, one other thing that stuck out in talking about what Kirk Reeder was discussing about how that could have saved baseball in Montreal, we do see momentum carrying certain cities to new things. Haven't we seen it in the Bay Area? The Warriors have, for a while, wanted a new stadium. They were going to get one, but wasn't there added momentum when they started being successful and then winning championships and they knew that they had that in their grasp? Or were the Giants somewhat like that and going for a ballpark? So, you know, they had bonds. There were levels of success that they had at Candlestick. But when the team is good, isn't there a momentum to carry things to the next level and maybe solidify staying where the team is?
I think there's a bit of a nudge to it. And to your point about Montreal, the fans, I think, would have been much more willing to rally around it if they were World Series champs. When you go back to the Giants in the late 90s, when Bonds came over, and I think it was 93, he was such a force that the Giants were starting to roll a little bit, but it was the ownership change that kept the team in San Francisco and ultimately led them to China Basin. And I think you could say the same thing about the Warriors, because when Joe Lacob and Peter Guber bought the team, you knew that they had designs on going across the water to San Francisco. And you remember they had the initial site on the Embarcadero,
yes,
where they had that big press conference, and I think Ahmad Rashad was presiding over it, and it seemed like they were ready to make that move. Ultimately, of course, they got shuttled down the way a little bit, Terry Francois Boulevard. But I think the ownership change was a bigger impetus than the winning for either team.
Fair enough. Yeah. You're right. Go ahead, Lo.
No, Dan's absolutely right. Because even when, you know, Tennessee, when they did Adelphia Stadium, it wasn't like the Titans. It wasn't like the Oilers were winning at the time. You look at Cleveland. You look at, you know, Cincinnati, the Dirty Natty. You know, those stadiums, they're getting, they're just in that forecast. They're still getting built anyway. But you're right as far as when you're winning, it's easier to get the public support. It's easier to sell tickets. Those things do help when you're winning. But as far as just building a stadium, those things, I think they're already in the works.
Montreal was, it was just so fun to see that logo and see the Expos, and they were such a good team. That was part of that fervor. Lo, did it resonate with you when Woody said, yeah, you know what, I miss going into the clubhouse and you know, chopping it up with Dunston, chopping it up with Nen. Did that resonate with you? Because you know, every player's career, Father Time, again, undefeated so far, Father Time is.
Yeah.
And when you, that you know, you had played 17, 16, 17 years. This just doesn't even count college.
Yeah.
And that year when you weren't going to a training camp / locker room, what was the hardest or maybe most difficult transition you had to make?
Yeah, it is really weird. And that's why when you listen to Wood and he's talking about, hey, about being in there with the locker and seeing the different guys, you go in the morning and whatever team you're on and you have different personalities, you have different guys from different walks of life. And they stretch you. They stretch you in every way imagination in that imaginable for a good reason. And it teaches you so much. And that's why Wood could laugh and talk about the different guys, of whatever nationality or in different regions. What do they bring to the table? It's so weird being in locker rooms and seeing some crazy dudes. I remember Hanek and Kasim Osgood, and you got, you know, different guys that you're around from Drew Brees and, you know, Tim DeWight, different guys, but you got to hang out, man, and it teaches you so much diversity. It lets you see the prism. I mean, you get a guy like Drew, and you know how many people think about his go-to guys. Think about his main targets, who they are. You know, it's a teaching. It's so interesting, though, being on teams where you're around different people. That's why, even in grade school, that's why Woody said he misses, and that's why he's talking about what sports do. They're so amazing. The people that would have never spoke, people that have never would have been in the same environment, they're in an environment because they have one common goal. And the goal becomes a work in progress because you have a goal, but now you got to work together to reach that goal. And you have to put aside your differences and you have to start working. You have to start training together. You're eating together. You're being around. You're knowing who's got your kids. And it forces people to change, you know, kind of their perspective on life, on what they see. And that's what I love so much about sports. And I think that's what, when you listen to Woody, he's talking about the different guys and what he loved, giving them crap and talking to them. These experiences, like you said, Coz, in the locker room, I miss it so much, being in those locker rooms, talking and hanging out and with the boys, hanging out with them. Those are those experiences, man. You just never know how much you're going to really miss them until they're gone.
Dibs, let me just say that if Lo had texted us that very message, you know what I would have done? I would have liked
him?
It. I would have liked it.
Yeah, we
I would have hit the like. I would have hit the like button. Yeah,
thanks, Coz.
That's what I would have done.
Hopefully.
I might have hearted it. I might have given that a heart.
You know what? Thank you. What's up with that, Dibbers?
Well,
Dibbers.
I didn't see where he was going because now he's trying to make me angry, and I don't appreciate that, Jim, because Lo, I don't even know if you were on this text thread last night, but you send a text thread to the group, and, you know, Jim's filling in, so we're communicating a little bit extra to make sure everyone's on the same page, and
they're holding my hand.
He sends a text, and then the next thing you know, you have another text coming, and it's simply our producer, John Curley. My man. And all he did was like the text. There's nothing more useless than liking a text. If you like it and you want to add to it, go ahead and respond. But by simply liking it or disliking it, I don't understand you iPhone users and your waste of time texts. That was infuriating last night, Jim.
No, it was a lot of liking going on, including the big boss who was chiming in from time to time with a like and a dislike, and he was getting on Curls. That's my new nickname for our producer,
Curls.
John
Curls.
Curls. Curls. So that has raised an eyebrow or two, and so, Lo, just remember, whenever you get into a text chain with my man Dibs, just give it a like, give it a little heart every once in a while, thumbs up. along the way?
Yeah.
A ha ha ha. If he chimes in with something funny, okay. Give it a ha ha.
Give it a ha ha ha. Okay, I can do that.
All right, that's what we like to see in this thing. Well, hopefully baseball comes back. Hopefully there is a happy medium between the 114 in-your-face games the Players Association is shoving at the owners, Dibs. You're right. That number, Dibs, you're absolutely right. 114, man, that is right in their grill, isn't it? That's
and
like,
it's
hey,
70% of a season, so they're looking at that saying, hey, 70%, you know, you're not going to chop us down to 50. If you're going to prorate, we're going to play 70% of the games. How about that, ownership?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then the owners try to counter with this 50-game plan and say, we prorate you down to 50 games and we'll get on with it and we'll crown our champion and get started again in 2021. So there's a big difference between the two sides. Hopefully something comes right with them, because I do think it would be better to have things going on in a sense of normalcy, whatever that normalcy is, because I don't even know if they've come up with a plan to play in one or two locations or to play in their particular home ballparks and try to have some kind of travel that goes on, whereas the NHL is going to go with two sites. They're bandying about, I think it's 8 or 9 different cities right now, 3 up in Canada, and then the rest down here in the United States. And then the NBA looking at their plan for the Disney complex down in Orlando. And they're going to vote on Thursday for a 22-game plan. Hopefully everything comes together for all the sports and we get a chance to see it, because we are 100 days. Today marks the 100-day mark from the start of the National Football League season. Kansas City and Houston on a Thursday night. And everyone looking forward to that, as John Curley likes the ha-ha-has from everybody on the text line. All right, we are going to move forward here. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fix Auto Collision Centers. We will look at the NBA's proposal, as there is a move from one owner to ask for all 30 teams to come back when the NBA does come back and the owners vote on Thursday. That's what's coming up. A traffic accident can be a real headache, so let Fix Auto Collision Centers help. Fix Auto has locations throughout the Bay Area. Call 1-800-INFO-FIX, 1-800-INFO-FIX, F-I-X, to find the location nearest you. Fix Auto, the first words that should come to mind after an accident. Joe Lowen, Dibs, here on a Tuesday. Co's in for Joe on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowen, Dibs.
I'm trying to be professional here,
right,
and rip other media members. That's what I do.
On 95.7, The Game.
Who listens to that? Who would listen to that is what I want to know. Who would listen to that? Welcome to the Money Spot, everybody. Joe Lowen, Dibs, here on a Tuesday on 95.7, The Game. It is one consecutive hour of commercial-free art, where Joe usually ad-libs something that is so entertaining and educational that I'm not even going to try. But it is brought to you by O'Donnell Financial Group. Survive before you can thrive. Call the O'Donnell Financial Group today and let them help you thrive. Joe Lowen, Dibs, Jim Cozumar in for Joe Fortenbaugh, who is off all week long. He is back on Monday. Good for you, Joe. Enjoy the time. You're going to get some great weather starting today. It's going to start heating up all throughout the Bay Area. Dibs, you're going to be hitting it. Now, Stiney told me the last time I was working with him, he said, you've gotten back to the links. Is that correct, Dibbers?
Yeah, yes, indeed it is. It's a love-hate relationship with the game. Yeah. And, you know, currently, especially in these times where there's only a small handful of things that you can do safely, one of them is play golf. I've reluctantly returned, but I have fallen back in love with the great game. And I'm looking to get out again here, Jim, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
It's overrated.
Is it an infatuation, or are you, are you puppy loving it with the game of golf again?
I believe I mentioned that it was love-hate, Jim. It's, I love to love it, but I hate to love it. And I also love to hate it, and I hate to hate it. So it's really all four angles are covered with me in golf over the course of 18 holes.
I love you.
Go ahead.
This guy, Coz, it's like he's like, Lo, he walks in one day like he lost his girl. He's like, Lo, I quit. I'm done with golf. I hate it. I'm not even playing anymore. And he comes in and just red face,
piss and vinegar. I'm like, Dibs, what happened? Just, I don't even want to talk about it. It's golf. I'm done with it. Lo, I'm done with it. I'm putting my clubs up. I gave golf up. Hey, I'm too old. You know what? I don't even want it. 3-4 months go by. Lo, I played. You know what? I played a game. And now this guy, he's...
had it going on the back, Lo.
Yeah, I had it going. I got my persimmon back out. I mean, but he came in one day. It might have been six... And Dibs, I really thought you were... And the way that you just blew golf off like that...
Yeah.
The snarl and the, like, giving the, you know, all the antics with it. I'm like, yeah, Dibs, you're like, no, I'm done, Lo. I'm serious. I freaking hate it. Get out. He was pretty much telling golf, get out of here.
No.
It's crazy.
I've come crawling back, Lo, on right. Hands and knees. On bended knee. Shout out, Boyz II Men.
Nah, let's go. I like the hands and knees. You are begging. You're begging.
Once you came back, did you find that it was coming back quickly for you? Or, like, that's part of the love-hate. When you come back and you hit a couple of good shots, were you starting to think, you know what? Maybe I just needed to be away from the game for a period of time. It's back, baby. I'm back, baby. It's the summer of Dibs.
I don't quite have the Steph Curry, I'm back, baby. I'm here. It's more the realization that I'm terrible, but it's something that you can still enjoy doing. And I've gone from being, you know, almost a single-digit, pretty decent player to now I'm straight-up bogey golf hacker. But as long as you lower your expectations, you can still go out and enjoy the walk, good exercise, fresh air, chasing that little white ball, slapping it left and then slapping it right. It's fun to get out there.
I do get my strokes in. Yeah. There's no question about that.
Yeah, you do.
I take up a little terra firma there along the way.
How about
all right,
that?
Are we still talking about golf?
Right. Well, that took a weird turn.
It's super weird.
That's good.
Friedel.
In talking about golf, I do think that's part of normalcy, and I think that there are a lot of people right now who are driving to work who either have played or are hoping to play. I got a buddy of mine who lives in Walnut Creek who, when they opened a course in Roseville, which is, 90 miles away Walnut Creek, he was able to get a tee time because they were extending 15 minutes between tee times? You know, instead of the typical couple of minutes between tee times, five typically, and this was 15 minutes between tee times?
Depends on the course. Usually it's about 8 minutes, but I also have friends who were going to Sacramento a month ago when Sacramento was the only place where golf was open. People so golf hungry, they were willing to drive, 100 miles or so just to play.
Yeah, and it was tough because to get a tee time, you had to arrange it in such a way because everyone has to have their own cart. And it's my understanding, Dibs, carts, it's not like you charge up the cart and it's good for, you can play 12 rounds on it, right? You charge up the cart, doesn't a charged cart get 2 rounds at best?
Usually, yeah. Yeah, 2 rounds at best. But the beauty of it now, Jim, is so many more people are walking, and I'm actually back walking the course again. So even though physically it wears me down a little bit, it's just nice to get out there and walk. And some courses, they don't even allow you to use a cart, so you have to walk.
Do you carry your bag? Do you have someone on your bag? Do you have that hand cart? What do you use?
When things are going my way, I have somebody carrying my clubs for me, Jim. But right now, I've been relegated to carrying my own clubs. I did play around about a month ago with a caddy, but my caddy didn't carry the clubs; just carried the beverages.
Oh, really? Beverage caddy.
A beverage caddy. Yes. All more. I can carry the clubs. He's got to handle the bevvies.
Couple of bits of news from the sports world. One of them very sad, I think, and that's the Hall of Famer from the NBA, the great Wes Unseld, who is a member of the Washington Bullets with Elvin Hayes. The former MVP passed away today. He was 74 years old. So Wes Unseld, does anyone remember what he was known for?
The outlet pass, Jim.
Yes.
Come on.
Know your NBA facts about factoids about former greats. Yep.
Yeah. And Lo, that's from, from my early childhood. Wes Unseld was one of those early players. That and the Big E, two almost mythical figures, Jim, from the mid to late 70s when you're a kid and, you hear your dad and your older brother talking about the Big E and Wes Unseld. And it's oh, man, these guys are ballers. But they're East Coast guys, so we didn't really see them up close out here,
Yeah, one of the it was the franchise's first number that was retired back in 81. Wes Unseld's number 41. And the story that I heard, Lowe, is that he could get a rebound at one end, turn, and that two-hand overhead pass that you make, like an outlet, he could actually throw it so hard and fast, he could throw it off the opposite backboard 94 feet away. That's how much strength he had.
Wow. That's a lot of power and strength to get that ball that far and bounce back off the back. Woo. It's a tough one.
Unseld and Wilt Chamberlain are the only players in NBA history to win Rookie of the Year and MVP honors in the same season. That's incredible.
Man. Yeah.
That's something. So Wes Unseld passed away at the age
of
74.
Rest in peace.
Exactly.
I do want to add this one in there as well, Jim, because I'm sure you've met this man who we lost yesterday, Lee Grosskopf, a.k.a. the Cupper. He passed away at the age of 83, yes.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, and I actually saw
the
this
Cupper.
Morning.
Oh,
Mike Kropichka, who we all know, one of the great radio engineers in the Bay Area, put something out on Facebook. And, Lee Grosskopf at the age of 83. And, Lo, during my 50-week unpaid vacation from 95.7 The Game, which was after I got fired and before I was rehired, I spent a year doing Cal football post-game. And my co-host was Lee Grosskopf, a.k.a. the Cupper, and one of the most fascinating stories, Lo, of all time. He worked in the Raider organization in the 60s. Yeah. Good friends with John Herrera. He was a former college quarterback, and he was really the original Johnny Football. One day, Jim, he told me story after story about some of his associations, some of his lady friends growing up. He worked on Monday Night Football for a year in the early days. Yeah. Lee Grosskopf, a true treasure. And, Jim, we lost him at the age of 83 yesterday.
Oh, wow. And he was a staple over at Cal football games for years and years and years, and then the weekly press conference for the luncheon that the schools have. The Cupper was always at the luncheon, and he would always go to the games. And if I'm not mistaken, was he in Tarzan movies? Wasn't he an actor?
Yes, he
Tarzan
was an actor.
Tarzan and Jane.
I think it was Tarzan. I know he was an actor. I mean, he was like an early Renaissance man with all the different things that he did. Like, you're right. His story, if you tell the story, the arc of his life, there's so many amazing things that he did and associations he had that you point out. God, Lee Grosskopf. He was always very nice to me, and it was an honor to get a chance to sit and kick around stories or listen, not kick around stories. Quite honestly, right, Dibs? Guys in our age group when we were coming up, you listened to them tell stories, right? You weren't like tossing stories back and forth. You were polite and you listened to their stories.
And that was the thing, is we drove one day, I think it was the Cal Stanford game. We did our post game show, which was only, I think, half an hour or an hour. This is when Jared Goff was quarterback, actually, Lo. And we drove down to Stanford, and I just picked his brain about all these stories about life in the 50s, because he finished 10th in the Heisman Trophy voting in 1957, quarterbacking at the University of Utah. So telling stories about the 60s. And he told me one story about Al Davis, the late owner of the Raiders. The Cupper was working for the Raiders at the time, and Al Davis had a secretary who was a very attractive young lady. And Al said to the Cupper, Al said, Lee, whatever you do, don't date my secretary. And Lee, sure, Al, of course, Mr. Davis. And come to find out, hours later, if not the next day, Lee and the secretary had become closer. They'd become closer friends. So
wow,
he was good looking dude.
So
the Cupper.
Many stories.
Really,
suave and former pro athlete. Just a great, great man. And I think he was sober for, man, it had to be 45 or 50 years throughout the tail end of his life. So he had a good long run as a single man ready to mingle. And he ended up just an incredible imprint on Cal football.
Yep, you're absolutely right with that one. So Wes Unseld passing away today, Lee Grosskopf yesterday. A little bit smaller scale story on this for those of you who are college football fans. Notre Dame was going to play Navy in Ireland this year. They have scrapped that plan. They are not going to play in Ireland. They're going to move that game to Maryland. Again, Coronavirus is, it's hacking away at a couple of different things in the sports world, but hopefully it doesn't last very much longer. As we move it along here on 95.7 The Game, Joe Lowen Dibs, the name of the program. I'm Jim Cozumore, in for Joe Fortenbaugh. And so the NBA is planning their attack, or putting their attack plan in order to try and make their return. Adam Silver said it would be July 31st, the target date when they would come back. He has worked very closely with the Players Association. Lo, how important was it for Adam Silver if he did have a design on coming back? Because we had heard it for a while that some players, some teams thought, well, I don't want to come back. It's a waste of our time to come back. Let's just scrap it. How important was it for the commissioner of a league to try and get in the good graces of the leaders of the Players Association to try and move a plan forward?
I think it's very imperative. You look at what Adam Silver's been able to do, you know, with the league and with the Players Association, the Chris Pauls and different guys. He's got the players, and the players has his ear as well as he has the players' ear. And that's the one sport that I think that is really united with their commissioner. I think when you look at any sports, all sports, the big three, I think none of the sports have a better relationship with their commissioner. Their commissioner is very hands-on with the players, and I think that's why the players love, you know, Adam Silver. He the way that he treats them, the power in which they have to leave and do things, it's unprecedented in that regard. But yes, I think because he built that rapport, you don't see these guys arguing over money. They understand that they're a family. They understand that they need to play. They understand what's at stake. And, you know, look at the Warriors, just a team that's, you know, be over the luxury tax if they don't, you know, get some of this stuff done. So I think that they're very this particular league is very motivated to play because it's about the bigger picture. And I think that they will play. And Adam Silver has been at the forefront and making sure that he's on this, and he's been communicating well with his players in the association.
And Dibs, you know, one of the biggest voices, the biggest voice in the NBA is LeBron James. And, you know, we first heard him say, hey, if we ain't going to have fans, I ain't going to come back and play. And then he walked that back when he kind of realized the pandemic is greater than we thought it was, right? It was a little bit different. But he also, being that he has the strongest voice, was one of the first to say, I want to come back and play. Was that really the biggest swing of the pendulum? When LeBron James says, I want to come back, don't the wheels start to move a little bit more quickly and a little bit more in unison?
I think it becomes influential to many players who might be on the bubble. But I think if you polled players across the board, especially those in playoff positions, and especially a guy like LeBron James, who he understands what's at stake for him from an individual standpoint. He's running out of time. He's running out of chances to win championships. And right now, he's already established as one of the greats of all time. But if you want to surge into the conversation with Michael Jordan alongside the greatest player of all time, you need more titles. And he understands that this year is a prime opportunity for he and his Laker team to get that. So I'm not saying he's only motivated by his quest for legacy and his quest for championships, but
that's
certainly that is definitely part of it. And I think if you went across the league, other players, like if you polled every Milwaukee Bucks player, they all would say, I would imagine, that they want to come back and play because they too also feel like they're close to a title.
Yeah,
Toronto,
exactly.
Players in Toronto, Boston, you're right, Dibs. A lot of teams want to come back and they want to play. And even there are some teams out there that are on the fringe that want to come back and play. You look at a guy like Zion, man, even if they wasn't in the playoffs, those guys, their first year in the league, there's a lot of guys, Dibs, that look at this and like, man, they're having fun, they're living their dream. Some of these players in their first, second year that are on teams that are maybe not as good, but they love basketball too. Of course they love the money, of course. And LeBron James, yes, he's chasing different demons. We understand that. But there's a lot of guys, this Laker team's going to be changing. You know, you look at a lot of these different teams, they're like, man, we have a chance. We want to get this season in. We have a just as good a chance as the Lakers to win it. So I think a lot of players still want to play basketball. Some wanting to win the titles because they believe they can, and some just before the love of the game.
You know, LeBron, part of LeBron's, you know, reason for coming back, as Dib said, is that, you know, he is chasing Michael Jordan. He wants to be on that pantheon. How many championships did Kobe have? Five?
Yeah.
Kobe had five, right? Michael had six. Kobe has five. Shaq has five. I think, or does Kobe have four? Any way you slice it, they're, you know, they've got multiple chips, and LeBron wants to be in that category. I don't think it's selfish of him trying to push the league to come back, even if some guys say, "Hey, listen, we've been away from the game for so long, we don't know the type of product we're going to put out on the floor." Because that was one thing that under David Stern was always imperative. We must have an excellent product on the floor at all times. Now, that doesn't mean the greatest players are going to be out there, but the product is going to be great. We're going to play the best basketball we can. And there might be some people who say, "I haven't played since March the 11th in a competitive fashion. I don't know if we can ramp it up on July 31st. But I don't think it's selfish of LeBron to push everyone to come back, even if it's for him, for his selfish need to get to those titles. I don't look at it as selfish at all. How do you look at it, Lo?
Well,
is it selfish to push back?
No. And here's the thing. I think a lot of people, believe it or not, this is what these guys have to do to stay in shape. You don't think these guys have been working out? I'm not saying they've been working out as hard as they should, but the majority of these teams, especially the teams that are vying for a playoff and vying to try to who think they can win a title, you don't think Giannis and those guys are working out even though now? Of course. So I think that we got to understand the amount of men that look at their job that had opportunity for the playoffs, Kawhi, Paul George. There's a lot of guys out there that are working hard. They can't wait. You know, they're champing at the bits, as Dibs would say. So I think that I don't think it's selfish of LeBron. He's not the only one who wants to play. A lot of guys want to play because a lot of these players in their team and organizations think they have an opportunity this year to win it all. So I think not only does LeBron want to play, but there's a lot of other players that are pushing that want the NBA to return.
All right, so there are a couple of different proposals on the table. A Thursday vote from the ownership group. It appears that they're honing in on a 22-team restart. It'll be a truncated year. They will play some semblance of either tournament or regular season games. It looks like the teams in the East are the top eight teams. There's, I think, a five-game gap between the eighth seed and the ninth seed. Washington, I think, is the ninth seed right now. They may be invited to this. They may not be invited to this. But in the Western Conference, you've got Sacramento, New Orleans, Portland, 3.5 games back of Memphis. And then you've got San Antonio, 4 games back. And so, Dibs, if you look, let's just look at the West. If I'm sitting there 3.5 games back and I'm New Orleans, can't I make the case and say, listen, if I had 18 games to play, I think I can catch you guys. Let's play as many games as possible because I think I could have made the 8th seed in the West.
You can make the case, but if you're going to play as many games as possible, then you've got to include all the teams and you've got to play out the regular season as it was constructed. Obviously not in the home sites as we initially intended, but at a neutral location. And if you're not going to do that, then in my opinion, you can't just try to jerry-rig some collection of games to make up whatever's not going to be fulfilled through the schedule. Because you've got some teams who have 18 games left. The majority of teams have between 15 and 18 remaining. So for me, unless you're going to play the full slate, bring all the teams back, don't even bother. And what you were saying about 22 teams, if you only take the top 8 in the East, what, then you're going to take the top 14 in the West? I don't know how that would work unless you do it evenly. And I look at these teams in the East, Washington, the 9 seed with a 375 winning percentage. Charlotte, the 10 seed at 354. Do we really need to see these teams back out on the floor? I don't think so. So for me, it's take the top 8 on each, play some play-in games or some seeding games if you want, but don't include all these other bottom feeders, including Portland, New Orleans, and yes, your Sacramento Kings.
Well, if you're not happy with the 22-game plan, you're not going to be happy with what Clay Bennett of the Oklahoma City Thunder is proposing. He did this at the end of the call on Friday. There was an ownership call last Friday. This from Woj. It was a Woj bomb that he dropped over at ESPN. And he said near the end of the call, Bennett asked about bringing all 30 teams back. He said, if we can do it in a safe fashion, why not bring all 30 teams back? And the reasoning is, claiming that it's not a fair setting for the smaller market teams, the San Antonios, the Sacramentos, the Portlands, the Utahs, the Memphises, the Indianas to an extent, all of these, the one-team towns, as I call them, to not have basketball, to go 9 months without games, March all the way to December, which to me, you know, it's funny, Dibs, this is from the Woj thing. This is really the first time I've seen it printed out. When you say you're not going to play from March to December, isn't it now a fait accompli? Next season of the NBA is going to start in December.
I think so. I mean, I don't know how you, even if you, I guess the only way you could do it would be if you said, you know what, this season's done, we're not resuming this season,
yeah,
and we're starting the NBA as per usual, October 20th or whatever, that the date seems to move around. If you made that declaration, then fine. I don't think the NBA is going to do that for a myriad of reasons. So if you do have, even if you go straight to the playoffs and you get done in, let's say you get done in the end of August, which I think is some of the estimations they want to be done before Labor Day, you can't then turn around and start in October. So I think it's pretty much a done deal. Unless they scrap the whole rest of this year, they will be starting sometime in December.
And I'll be very interested in what the end date is for the end of the playoffs for this round. I know they had a few, they had a big general managers and owners questionnaire. One of the dates was October 1st. They thought it could end on October 1st, but almost a clarity that December will be the next starting point for the 2020-2021 season. That seems to be one of the things that hasn't really been talked about specifically, but when you see it in this article by Adrian Wojnarowski, you kind of figure it out. And that's going to be a whole new seasonal schedule to get used to. But to get back to the argument from the owner for the Oklahoma City Thunder, he said, listen, you're going to be without games for 9 months in some of these small markets. You won't be able to develop players. You won't be able to cultivate sponsorships. You won't be selling any tickets. These markets are struggling already. If you don't let them come back and maybe get some of that regional sports network money, you're going to leave them behind, and it's going to be too hard for them to catch up. Is part of the discussion, hey, if I'm a player in the league and I've only been in the league 2 years, I want to have extra games because I want to get better, because I want to improve for years 5, 6, 7, and 8 in my career.
No question that the players want it. They think like that. I mean, you know, we're looking at it through the eyes of, okay, let's just get it done. We miss sports. These teams don't have a chance. They want to get out of here. And reality is, they enjoy playing. A team that's during their last place, when he slams the ball and he hits the three, you still see them excited and jumping around like they just won a championship. Why? Because it's that adrenaline. Guys enjoy playing. And I think too, the owner's just like, look, if you don't, we're losing a lot of money. So I think those are something that maybe the league has to look at and say, hey, these small market teams, if you guys decide not to do that, we need to make an exemption. We need to pump funds into their organization. So how does that look? Does other owners want to do that? Are they willing to give up a little bit more of the pie for these second tier markets that don't have, you know, that? Are they going to do that? Are they willing to do that? Or are they rather just say, we'd rather play some more games for they can make their own revenue?
So you look at the proposal from the Oklahoma City owner wanting 30 teams to come back and play on some level to give them some fighting chance for the future. Dibs, if you didn't like the 22 games, my guess is 30 games, you're going to say PU, and you're just going to say, I'm going to wait till the playoffs start, the actual playoffs start, or maybe even deep into the playoffs before you even start to take a gander at what product they're putting out there.
Well, there's a curiosity factor, and I'll certainly watch it as I've come to watch Summer League in increased dollops, so to speak. But that is kind of, to me, what this would feel like, a little bit of a glorified Summer League, because if you have a team that's far out of it. Let's just take the Knicks. So the Knicks are going to go on and take on Atlanta. You've got 21-45 against 20-47 at a random court in Orlando. It's a tune-out. I think it's even a tune-out for Knicks fans and Hawks fans. So now you get into the point of, why are we doing this? If it's just for money, then that to me is a bit of a disingenuous look, especially considering where we are with this time. So for me, give me the top teams. Do some exhibition games if you want, and just get right into meaningful playoff basketball.
You know, it might be a tune out in the end of March, but low, being that we are so thirsty for something other than what our life has been, and so many people want some sport, isn't Knicks, Hawks, from an empty court in Orlando on a Tuesday afternoon. And let's not kid ourselves. These games that they're going to be playing, if they have one site with three arenas, they're going to be playing games that start at 12 noon all the way through 10 at night. So your team's game might start, if they do bring all 30 back, a Warrior game might start at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific, and you'd be watching Warriors and Cavaliers or whoever the schedule ends up spitting out to us. But aren't we thirsting enough that we'll take Knicks Hawks in the middle of the afternoon?
I think you would. I think that is it going to get huge ratings? No, but will you get ratings in your market? Absolutely. And I think that's the thing, Dibs, that I don't know if you're things that you should look at a little closer, Dibs, because these smaller markets, and not just smaller markets, even the bigger markets, don't you think people still watch the Warriors? And we said, hey, we're getting basketball back. Even with the Warriors' record as way it is, we're still going to want to watch and wanting to see what they're going to do. We'll still watch, even though we won't watch as intently if they were competing for a championship like we have in the previous years. But I think you still watch it. I think you're still engaged because it's still your team. So I understand what these small markets are dealing with.
Yeah, I think it's a curiosity in the beginning. And also, you guys are looking at this in a vacuum of this being the only thing back. If basketball brings back all 30 teams with a mid-July resumption, baseball likely is going to be back. We know golf will have returned by then, English Premier League. So you're going to be sharing the sports stage with other sports. And I think when you get into these games, Coase is talking about a 9 a.m. start. We'll lead you right up to the pregame here on Jolo and Dibs.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.